Welcome to Everybody Hates Me, Let's Talk About Stigma, a podcast hosted by Dr. Carmen Logie. She is the Canada Research Chair in Global Health Equity and Social Justice with Marginalized Populations and an Associate Professor at the University of Toronto's Factor in Wintosh Faculty of Social Work. This show features amazing speakers from around the world talking about stigma from research, lived experiences, and activism perspectives. Why should we care about stigma? What can we do about it? This podcast is recorded on the traditional territory of many nations, including the Haudenosaunee, Anishinaabewaki, and the Mississaugas of the Credit First Nation. This land is covered by Treaty 13, signed with the Mississaugas of the Credit. Historical and ongoing legacies of colonization produce injustices for Indigenous communities, and this podcast aims to understand alternative ways forward. Thank you for tuning in. Let's start the show.
Hello, listeners. I am so excited to introduce our guest speaker today, Kim Kennedy. She is a reproductive justice activist, sexuality educator, and HIV and AIDS advocate. She has dedicated the last 20 years of her professional life working in the area of human sexuality with a specific focus on HIV, AIDS, and sexually transmitted infection advocacy and the elimination of other health disparities that impact women and youth. Welcome. How are you today?
I'm finding you.
I'm pretty good. Normally, I talk if I have an origin story with somebody, and we have not met, I don't think.
No.
And are you part of the Well Project, or they recommended you? I know those folks.
So I have been a CAB member, a community advisory board member for the last, I want to say like 6 years or so. I just help out with sitting with the women. We all talk about what's happening, give our feedback. So it really gives a voice and a power to women of the community to be helping out women's issues. So that's, you know, all of us helping to educate and bring awareness and stop stigma around HIV.
Great. So we kind of know each other via the Well Project, and you're on our community advisory board. That's amazing. So I'm going to, where are you right now?
Oh, I'm in Brooklyn, New York.
Oh, I like Brooklyn. My friend Caroline lives there. I mean, I'm going to show up at your place in Brooklyn, which I actually would like to do because I really like New York and Brooklyn.
Just know that you will be fighting for food with my son.
Oh.
And my husband.
Oh.
Because they eat. But if you do come, I got you. I'll feed you.
So I didn't even count that into the equation. I'm sold. I won't fight with them. I'll just smile and maybe there'll be some leftovers for me. what do you cook? What's your favorite thing to cook?
Oh, I cook everything. So I think if I had to do a signature dish,
ooh,
it would probably be lasagna. So
ooh,
I don't eat beef.
Yeah.
But I'm a big turkey and pork eater, and I get like the turkey sausage and the pork sausage and get all the peppers and onions. And my family, even though it's an expensive meal, they go crazy for it. So I think that would be my macaroni and cheese is famous. Everybody requests that.
I love
my
macaroni
salad.
And cheese. Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I can't wait to visit you. So I'm going to show up. I'm going to show up right now. And my time machine, it can go through time and space. It can go backwards and forwards. It can have multiple destinations.
Mm-hmm.
And it's COVID safe. So I'm going to show up and I'm going to say, Kim, take me to the time and place where you thought I want to do reproductive justice, or where that seed was planted for you to do the current work you do. Where would we go?
A COVID-safe time machine. Huh. I think it would be maybe when I was like 16, 17, sitting in my classroom in the back, hiding, and listening to the teachers talking about HIV, AIDS, and reproductive health, and saying, you will get pregnant, don't have sex, people with HIV are, it was weird because this is like the early 2003 of them saying like people with HIV are dangerous, and I'm sitting half quiet, like just stirring in my seat, shaking, wanting to speak and give more information. But then also remember that everybody knows me in my high school and I didn't want to make it so hot. So I think that would be the time where I probably would have said more than what I did say at 16, 17. So I think that would be the moment where if I can go for me right now, just jump in and be like, hey, y'all, no, this is what it is.
And was that also in Brooklyn?
Yeah.
Okay, so our time machine is going back in time and staying in Brooklyn. Okay, great.
I'm just so 10 excited. Blocks away from my house.
Okay, awesome. And so I'd love you to talk to the listeners a little bit about your work around stigma, around, I think, sexual pleasure. So why don't we go there? Why in the year 2023, why is there still stigma? Does this matter? And why should we talk about sexual pleasure? Just give it all to us.
Okay. So I guess a little bit about me. So I was born HIV positive. Me being born positive, and I grew up in a really religious household. So my grandma was a pastor of her own church. It was very, we speak, but it's more be seen and talk when you're told to talk for the most part. So I always been curious, is always staying in a child's place kind of thing like that. And I didn't really understand like why I was going to the doctor so much, why I didn't live with my parents. And I didn't understand, you heard about HIV through the whispers in the house, but didn't understand exactly what it was. So for me, it in the early 90s, because I'm 36, I'll be 37 this year. And this was in the height of when HIV was still coming around and
yeah,
I guess shaping of what it would look like, and didn't even have all this information that we have now. So the stigma back then isn't as strong, I think, in New York compared to how it is in the southern state. But for me, it was something that I had more internalized stigma, where it was me wrapping around my head of who I am, is HIV all that I am, seeing that both my parents died back to back from each other, seeing how everybody reacted to that, and then realizing that I don't want that to be my story, and learning more about HIV and learning more about, you know, if I can share my story and educate people in my way while I'm finding myself as a teenager, which is crazy. Mm-hmm. Maybe it will lessen the blow of how people perceive HIV. And then HIV went into me learning about it, so then me being a health educator and learning about the body. Mm-hmm. And always told that if my grandma was down from a, she was like, she lived down south. She used to live down south. So everything was like older terminology, like, oh, if you think about having sex, you're a homemonger. And I'm like, a homemonger?
A home what?
A homemonger. So a homemonger is also known as a hoe, prostitute.
Oh,
like,
oh, okay. I thought it was like a hoe. It sounds like almost like a homeowner.
No, a homemonger. Yeah, this is like an old school term for like somebody down south. So she would always call us different names like that. And we'd just be confused, like, what? So for me, it was, I wasn't even doing anything yet. But I was curious. But me being HIV positive always scared me to want to do more. Or even just get close to other people because of the stigma that I have for myself. Even though I was healthy, even though I was, you know, I felt like I lived two different lives. I had the advocacy Kim, and then I had the hood version Kim who was ready to beat people up. So they never intersected until like 16, 17. And I think that's when it was like, I want to talk more about your body. I want to talk more about sex. We're having sex, but nobody's talking about it. Mm. And are we enjoying sex? What does enjoying sex look like? We focus so much about trauma and focus so much about protection. But if the majority of women are contracting HIV and it's related to sex, why are we not having this conversation? Nobody's addressing it. So totally. I was like, I want to be that person. I want to talk about it. So.
That's awesome. And from then, I guess it's been almost 20 years. What? How would you say there's still stigma today? How has it changed? What do you think are the issues now that you're fired up about?
So there's stigma today. There's still stigma. I see it in, I saw it a couple of years ago, maybe like three. in my neighborhood of my son playing outside and somebody, I'm openly HIV positive. And I'm part of a campaign called HIV Stops With Me. So I have a billboard.
Yes.
Love it.
Yeah, I think I've seen it. Yeah.
Oh, check out my Instagram.
Okay.
It's a billboard in like the middle of Brooklyn. We're on different Pandora commercials, like Snapchat. It's like all over. And somebody recognized me and their daughter was playing with my son. And they went and screamed and got their daughter away from my son. And was like, she had AIDS. You can't play with her son.
Oh
and
then for God. Me,
you know, my son was not, that time he was maybe like 8. It was like 5 years ago. He was like maybe 8, 9. And that freaked me out and pissed me off. And I'm like, really? What year is this? Why are we still doing this? I realized like, okay, at least I know that I will always have a job. Because if this is one person, it's in the 2000s or at that time, it was like 2018, maybe right before the pandemic, actually. And if we're still doing that, then that means that my job's not done. So I can't just rest and be like, I want to be an accountant even though I can't count properly. Like, I'm going to still be and do this. And I think it more just HIV education into sexual pleasure because of the fact that I'm a married woman. I want to learn how to do other things or want to explore more things. And when I go to the doctor or when I went to the doctor before, my male doctor was never asking me about sex. Mm. He assumed that I'm married, I'm in a relationship, we can just skip over this. And then when I asked him, which I felt like it wasn't really my place to be like, you never asked me about this. And he was like, well, you're not having sex with your husband because you just choose not to. And it was like him berating me for me being tired or me going to school. Because at that time, I was a full-time student. I was working 8,000 jobs. I was getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning. And they're getting at me because I'm like, I don't want to have sex all the time. And it's not pleasurable if I'm tired. Mm. And he was like, what does that have to do with anything? And it was just like, oh, I need to report you. But then let me educate you. So that's where it kind of shifted and kind of morphed and really went in me going into a different direction of how I want to do my advocacy.
Wow. It's so good to know that you are still in struggle because it sounds there's a lot to struggle about. And so do you from your perspective, the silence around sex and sexual pleasure, do you think, because I have a feeling it's just about the fact we still stigmatize sex in general. That's why like HIV is stigmatized, sex work is stigmatized, queer and trans folks are stigmatized because people are just stigmatizing just sex. Like, we still have these hangups. Is that something you notice in your work?
Yeah, definitely. I think when you say the word sex, you can hear a pin drop. You can see the facial expressions change. You can feel the energy just shifts into, oh my God, what is happening? Like I almost wore, if this was recorded, I would have switched into my hoodie that I just made that says masturbation, tequila, and wings in that order because, and I went to the airport with that and just the face of people, like, older people just looking at me like, oh my God, this lady went and turned her son's face. And he's like 3. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure he don't know how to read. And just moving it away because the first thing you saw was masturbation in big purple letters. And it's like, Dad, we can't even have, you can't even read it where you are just feeling offended and appalled. And it's like, why? Like, why is this not normalized? Clearly you had sex or thought about having sex because the child is here. Somebody did something. But no, we don't want to talk about that. We don't want to talk about the pleasurable things that it could be. And I know that can be traumatic for some people, but at the same time, life could be traumatic. We're still in a pandemic. So like, we're still talking about that. But why are we not talking about that? You can talk about our ears, our eyes, our nose. But the moment you say vagina or clitoris, it's like, oh my God, you're cursing at us. And it's why? Why is that uncomfortable? So
I want to know why. How do you, okay, we won't go to solutions yet. I still want to get to this. So we'll get there. So do you think that there's something, I don't know, like why, I'm wondering, I'm sitting here being like, okay, sex is stigmatized. Is sexual pleasure stigmatized because sex is stigmatized? Or do you think there's a different kind of hang up when we talk about sexual pleasure?
So I think that sexual pleasure, and I'll stick to, so I had this question about a month ago in a situation where I was asking myself on, we have this whole thing with like body autonomy, right? Mm-hmm. What is that? And looking at women, period, we fight for our rights from the beginning of time. When you go to like Black women, you know, it, we never really had our own sense of who we are, of ownership for our body. So if you're breaking it down from like women where the test of time of our, a lot of society sees that our main thing is to please our partner, to make them happy, to have them, you know, feel, get, basically for them to come, for them to orgasm. It's never really asked about us. It's never really about what does women want? What do women look like? And like, what do they need? And then especially when you break it down in the Black and brown community, we didn't even get that chance, even from the beginning of time of us saying that the projection of women, Black women and our images just being shown as the Jezebel or the mammy in society and over-sexualizing us so that way we can be portrayed that way, but then never actually having to deal or explore what pleasure looks like. That's a big thing from even way before, we're talking about 2023. And then you go into like civil rights, as we're doing civil rights, we have the women's suffrage movement. So now we're helping white women, and not just to make it about race, but helping them with their right. And we're joining into their fight. But then we're so busy with not getting hung on trees and getting like killed. So again, while in one part, we're like helping one area of our right, but then in free love movement of having titties out and being able to be like, let's enjoy ourselves. We didn't have that pleasure. We were still trying, again, fighting for our rights, proving that we can vote by saying this is a 50 quiz test. And that's where our focus was on how we're not even getting equal pay as women. So like pleasure, what is that? Why are we even thinking about what makes us feel good when we have to fight basically every day just to be seen, be heard, or just be noticed? So I think that plays a bigger part in just what that looks like, even with gender roles. Gender roles play a part where it wasn't for us to think about what we want, what we want to look like. It was really on what does our partner, what they need. We have to be the one that wakes up, iron their clothes, cook the dinner, make sure the kids are fed and going to Little League and doing all this extra stuff. But again, the moment that we take a breath, it's looked at as you're being lazy or you're not doing what you're supposed to do as a wife or a mother. And then we have the whole weight on our shoulders of, well, does it even matter what we want? Does it even matter what this looks like? So just pleasure in itself, you just take away sex. It's having to be redefined of what we need, and we're not really taking the time to do that. So I think that that's a bigger problem. Like, just take sex out, but just pleasure for women, period. Enjoying yourself. And not feeling the guilt behind it.
Thank you so much for all those gems of wisdom. I think it's really important to think about sexual pleasure in the context of racism, in the context of sexism and gender inequity. Because for racism, you're right. How, when there's a racist stereotype that people are either not sexualized or over-sexualized, how can you find the space for sexual pleasure without sort of disentangling or dismantling these racist stereotypes? And I've been working with, I don't know if you know, the Pleasure Project and Annie Philpott. They have some really interesting writing about how sexual pleasure has often been denied to people based on race and class and geographic location. Like sexual pleasure is only for certain types of bodies and people and relationships. And it's not considered, quote, appropriate or important or a priority. And also that idea that when we think about sexual pleasure, taking that step back, what you just said, and being like, what about pleasure in general? who is worthy or who has the access to pleasure? I mean, maybe all of us, but some folks have less access and space to make time for thinking about pleasure, right? Is what you're saying is really, it's really great. And I want to ask you the next stigma question, which is, okay. And you have given an example. You talked about your own experience with ignorance around HIV transmission in your neighborhood and your own experience with a male physician. I'm wondering for the listener, if you could kind of walk us through an imaginary person. It could be someone you know, but like a protagonist who wakes up in the morning. How would like stigma around sexual pleasure or sex or HIV, like just walking through the day, can you kind of give us an example?
Of what sexual stigma would look like?
Or stigma in general, if it's around sex or sexual pleasure, if thinking about the conversations that you're having with people, the work that you're doing, what is a common way? Because you talked about kind of, I don't know if it was just concerns about disclosing your HIV status back 20 years ago. Is that still something that young women who are 16, 17 today are struggling with? Or you talked about like your doctor just not even mentioning sexual pleasure. Is that something that if someone was walking through the world today, would they bump into these stigmas still?
Yes. I think that, so for me, I lived my life where it's an open book with some caveats to the open book. Like, I'm not going to tell you everything that I did.
Some of the pages are closed.
Yeah, some of them look like you need a special lock and key to get that. But for the most part, I had to accept myself to be that person, to be open. But I have friends who do not disclose to their children about their status, who the only person that they disclose to is their doctor. And that's if they even go to the doctor. And a lot of us, and I'll say this being positive, and I understand the why. I understand both parts, where you don't want to tell people because you don't know what other people's reaction is going to be. Mm. And anytime that you disclose your status, you're taking a risk of somebody judging you or looking at you as you're less than. And honestly, we just want to be accepted. Mm-hmm. And then especially when you add the factor of sex or just enjoying something that might not seem normal. And I'm putting up a loose quote of normal, what normal is. It's the risk of people giving you crazy eyes. And if you're not comfortable with yourself, and I think that's the key important part, is comfortable with yourself, you will be miserable. So like walking down a block and me having on my masturbation shirt and having a vulva out on a hat, or I had earrings that were vagina earrings, you know?
Nice.
But I make the uncomfortable comfortable because I know that it's uncomfortable, but I make it to where you want to look and then I can ask a question because I know you're not. And there's people who walk into spaces and avoid that, who avoid wanting to be looked at, wanting to have anything misplaced, so that way you won't ask them a question to have to be forced to lie or to make them uncomfortable, or honestly to make you uncomfortable. And I think that what it is we don't want to make other people uncomfortable. We want to keep everything kind of, you know, just in a same kind of calm plateau where we're not shaking things up, because our world is already shaken up and a lot of our lives is already shaken up. So why add another component to make you uncomfortable or have me be uncomfortable? And I think that's a lot of it with providers not talking about sex, not talking about pleasure, because they don't want to be uncomfortable. So why should I make you uncomfortable? And then it heightens the risk of you not coming back, because I might have said something and I got the wrong idea and now you're lost out of care, or you don't want to open up. And I think there's little ways that you can build up to it, but most people are happy with their bubble or happy in the sense that they're in, that they won't break out of that, because it's being scared of the unknown. And I think that's the whole thing is with disclosure, sex, with being in a partnership, even friendship, it's scared of what that looks like based off of something that happened before. So I don't know if I answered the question.
You did. I mean, it's really interesting. My class I'm teaching right now is an empowerment class in social work. And we actually talked about sexual pleasure, and I brought the World Association for Sexual Health, the Declaration on Sexual Pleasure. I handed it out and I'm like, I might be the only one in this building now handing out declarations of sexual pleasure, but it really is about sexual well-being. We know it's linked with sexual well-being. We know it's linked with sexual health, like engaging in sexual health, having those conversations. And what we talked about, which kind of brings me back to what you were just saying, was that sometimes people just avoid these conversations because they're uncomfortable. But we need to be okay with being uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't want to have uncomfortable conversations, we won't also talk about racism. We won't talk mm-hmm. about LGBTQ stigma. We won't talk about mm-hmm. sex. Like, we're going to like mm-hmm. leave out like so many really important areas that we need to see more social justice and more human rights and equity in, just because we don't want to be uncomfortable. I mean, I'm mm-hmm. sure some of us have sat on a bus and it's a bit uncomfortable. It's crowded. Like, and you just deal, you know, you just put in your podcast or do your thing. And you're just like, I'm not always comfortable. It's too hot. It's too cold, like whatever. But it's kind of weird that we could sit with physical discomfort sometimes more than that emotional discomfort, right?
Yeah, I'm uncomfortable wearing a bra, and I have to do it. So it's like, but I can't have a conversation about, I don't like the way you eat me out, or I don't like the way, if you just curve your penis and come at this angle, like, we're not having that. We're sitting in an uncomfortable situation and having to wipe and clean extra, possibly having our pH thrown off, for uncomfortable, unsatisfying sex at times. And it's not pleasurable for me. But I have to do now all this extra work for something I just got into. I'm not doing that. Like, at all. I feel that, and I would say I'm blessed, and I wouldn't even say lucky, that I've been with my partner for so long. We've been together since we were 16.
Wow. So
that's a good wow, and it's a bad wow.
That's amazing.
So it'll be 20 years that we've been together.
This better be a big party this year, Brooklyn.
I would hope so, but my son is in football, and that's expensive. So it's giving. We're gonna go to a cute restaurant and nice. Hopefully drop off our son somewhere so we can have a moment for us. That's what it's like. But yeah, I think for us, if we had to, and I think that's something when you think of like just relationships, period, with people. And we came into our relationship at 16. So that's already 16 years of drama, 16 years of trauma, 16 years of experience, and 16 years of life before we even got together. And now we're coming together, and instead of at times, it felt like that we pushed all of the 16 years experience to the side, and then we started our new stuff, like, this is us together, and we're going to build something new versus, all right, let's work through our stuff that we both went through at separate times and help each other heal through that. And I think that, and we just started doing this, and this is 20 years later of us tackling things that I might have experienced, or he might have experienced, or problems that we've had in the past, like, that we couldn't work through at 16, that we're now working through at 36. And instead of just putting that Band-Aid on and wondering why this topic is still coming up, you know, it's not realizing how once we solve that, it's like a level unlocked. Like, it's like the MCU phase four, like, kind of situation where it's like, okay, now we can experience pleasure in a different way. And I think that a lot of people enter in different relationships where they're not dealing with past trauma or dealing with past hurt or past experiences and not solving it. You just kind of put in a patch on it, throw it in the box, and then pleasure, enjoying life, trying to get to a point where no longer there, just routine of doing the things that you wanted to do or doing the things that you have to do versus actually living and experiencing. And I think for me right now in the new part of my life, and I say new because I done quit my job 2 years ago, but I was making really good money to say I wasn't enjoying it. And I want to enjoy what I do. So now that I'm in this new phase of my life of I want to enjoy life, because life is too short, a pandemic will do that to you. It's like now we're doing that with our relationship, where now we're both like, let's actually fix this problem so that way we can enjoy life, enjoy sex, enjoy the little parts that we might have taken advantage of. And I think that's a big thing just with society, no matter what color you are, whoever you are, the amount of money that you have, is that a lot of times we enter into spaces and don't solve the past problems that we have. And then we blame everybody else and then don't realize that, wait, I might have had a part in this and I want to enjoy, but why can't I? Like, why can't I enjoy this ice cream? Like, what? What is stopping me from having this? What is stopping me from watching this TV show? Why can't I laugh? Like, why can't I do that? And a lot of it is past trauma that nobody wants to talk about or nobody wants to address. And everything doesn't have to be trauma driven, but it can be, let's solve this and then enjoy it. And I think that's, for me, is a big part of not just focusing on pleasure, because how do you, but it's also solving the problem that you went through to be able to experience and at least enjoy the thing that's coming up.
So fascinating and so important that by thinking about our blocks or our stigma or the barriers to talking about uncomfortable things like sex and sexual pleasure, if we can get through that, we can actually think about all the uncomfortable things in our life that are getting in the way of us just living a pleasurable life, whether that's trauma, which is also stigmatized, right? Mm-hmm. So it's sort of like once you can kind of get your, if we're going into the Marvel universe, which I think you were alluding to, I just saw Ant-Man and Wasp, the Quantumania. It was really good. I love Marvel.
I'm going today.
Oh, it's so good. It's really good. I couldn't even leave. Like normally I go out there for the bathroom or something. I didn't leave. I was like, this is so good. It was really good.
Are you an end credit leaver? Please tell me you're not an end credit leaver.
I watch all the credits till till they turn the lights on.
Okay.
And it's worth it. There's two, just saying. And one of them, they make you wait till after all of the, can I just tell you, there's a lot of credits, like a lot. There's a lot of people, but you have to wait to the very end. Worth it though. And I want to be watching. There's two post-credit scenes. Yes. For if you haven't seen it, and we Google, because sometimes my partner wants to leave and I'm like, no, I know what I missed. Any post-credit scene. And you can't believe they make you wait till the bitter end. But I think, to that point, and once you get your superpower of being uncomfortable and talking about stigmatized things, like it could open up all these other places of possibility of like experiencing joy and pleasure, like in all of your life. You are just awesome. You're so awesome, Kim.
Thank you.
I really enjoy listening to you and talking with you. I have one last stigma question.
Okay.
There's a listener right now. Maybe they're sitting on the bus. Maybe they're driving a car. Maybe they're walking their dog. I don't know what people do. I keep asking for like suggestions of what people do while they're listening to podcasts. I used to walk my dog and then our dog passed away in September. So now I listen to podcasts when I'm driving or I'm in transit or, you know, things like that. And they are thinking, Kim, what can I do to be part of the solution of stigma around sex, sexual pleasure, HIV? What do you want the listener to do?
I think it depends on what they're comfortable doing. So
I think we're trying to get people to be uncomfortable.
Yeah, but at the same time, you don't want to scare them and be like, hey, so touch your vagina or touch your penis now. But that honestly is a good way to start. If you're talking about sexual pleasure, touch yourself. And you'd be surprised how many people don't touch themselves at all. Like, we'll touch ourselves to wash, but usually there's a cloth or a loofah, I would hope, that people are using that when they're washing. I think getting a mirror, and this woman told me to do this, she said, have you ever seen your vagina? And I was like, no. And I was like, it's there. I know it's there. Why gotta touch it? Why gotta look at it? And she's like, look at it, touch it, get naked. The house is empty, or you have a moment. Get a mirror, a pocket-sized mirror, open your legs, put it on the side of the tub or the toilet, and then just look down and then see the parts. If you are somebody with a penis, then touch your penis, touch your scrotum, like feel it, touch your body, recognize like what makes it feel good, like graze your fingers, and I'm sorry if this is getting explicit, but like graze your fingers over the tip of your penis. See what that feels like. Do you like to be touched around the opening? Do you want to be touched, you know, on the top, on the rim of the head? If you're circumcised, is it when you pull it back? Is that the feeling that you get, that it feels good when you do that? Does it feel good when you pull on it? And I think that we always want somebody else to like pleasure us, but then not understand what is pleasurable to us. So like, and actually exploring our own bodies. So before we even get to advocating or getting to somebody else, is what feels good to me. Put your fingers in places. Touch yourself. If you are somebody who is anal play intrigues you, but you're not sure, get your finger, clip your nails first and find them. You don't need you cutting yourself. Get some good lube or Vaseline if that's your, you know, if you got it, or spit on it. It's free. And then stick your finger inside of you and feel what that feels like, you know? And I think that right there is something that we don't do, is take the time to see what we like, what we need, so that way you can articulate that to another person. Or just do that for yourself. And it's, I would say, take 15 minutes out of your day to do that, where you're just exploring your body and having a moment with yourself. And that could be your self-care for the day, or your self-exploration for your moment.
I think that's really empowering, Kim, because I think if, A, just for people to get to know their own bodies, I think is part of reproductive autonomy, reproductive mm-hmm. sexual reproductive health, just understanding mm-hmm. your body. And second, understanding what people like, because if you don't know what you like, it's, you know, mm-hmm. it's hard to expect or get that in a relationship if you haven't figured out. And that's about sex and about everything, mm-hmm. right? So it's about actually taking the time to get to know yourself and all of yourself in a better way. I think that's really empowering.
Keep a journal about that. Like, I would say if you're going to dedicate 15 minutes of the day or a week to it, write down, I touched my nipples, and when I touched it this time of the day, it made me feel like this. And then that makes the comfortable uncomfortable. It makes the uncomfortable comfortable. It's because you're doing something that you might not have done before, but then also now you can read it. So it's a visual. It's something that you can feel. So using all of your senses to be in that moment with yourself. And then, like you said, making it easier for when you want to articulate that in the bedroom or wherever you're going to be at with the next person.
You want to know something funny? I posted another podcast like a while ago with Annie Philpott of the Pleasure Project. She had the same assignment, not the exact same, but I'm going to send you the link. Listeners, if you're interested in sexual pleasure, I think you're getting a consistent message about what to do from the experts here and to get over stigma and shame. So thank you so much. Is there anything you want to say before? I didn't tell you that we're going to be doing wild card questions to get to know the real you. But before we get there, is there any last things you wanted to say about stigma, sex, pleasure to the listener?
I think it's okay to be afraid. I think it's normal to be afraid, but I think it takes a person to be brave enough to say, you know what, I don't know, I don't understand, and I'm willing to learn. That takes a piece of confidence and empowerment, and that's great to do. So just by them even listening to this podcast and maybe staying to the end or even just clicking on it is something that's the first step to breaking stigma, and also just being interested on how to be the change that they might be interested in seeing.
That's awesome. Thank you. Okay, are you down for a few wild card questions?
No, let me get up. No, I'm ready. I'm ready.
All right. What are you watching on Netflix, Crave, Hulu, whatever is your platform?
So I just finished watching the Miss Pat Show.
The which?
Miss Pat. Miss Pat Show. Oh, she is hilarious. She's on BET Plus. I just finished watching all three seasons. It's amazing. I love it. And she gives like the real, she's a comedian who talks about her life, but has her family there, and it's like ghetto hood ratness, but then with a sense of family with a message. So that's my kind of TV show. And I'm also waiting for you, the second part of You, to come on next week on Netflix.
The second part of
You. Oh my God.
I only do the Netflix Crave.
What?
Yeah.
You. It's You on Netflix?
I don't know. What's You?
Oh my God. Stop.
I don't know
what it's about. Okay. So it's a guy who speaks, so the narration is him, like, I'm thinking about you all the time, you. But then, okay.
You got a nice narration voice. You should do some voiceover.
I need to get a check for that. No, but he wound up like being infatuated with a person, like stalking them. He's jerking off in the night, watching them through the window, hiding behind trees. And then he's like putting himself into places to be with them. Like,
is that creeping you out?
No, oh, I love it. I love it.
Oh my God.
Love it. He's crazy. And then he winds up killing the people that are like getting in his way so he can be in a relationship with them. He is making cages in his basement, locking people up. No. Sorry, spoiler.
Kim, I would never watch this. I would really leave my house if I watched that.
Love it. Love it. Love it. So it's the second part right now, and I'm waiting for it to drop next week.
I mean, I watched like Drag Race, you know, like.
I watch Drag Race too. I'm watching it. I'm all over the place with the things I watch. My best friend, he's a drag queen. So I'm infatuated. He calls me, I'm his inspiration for his drag when it comes to like his hair and stuff.
Oh, nice.
Go on my Instagram.
You do have amazing hair. Sorry, listeners, you can't see Kim's hair, but it's spectacular. It's okay. I love the colors too.
My hair changes all the time. All the time. So his wigs and everything is, yeah, a lot of it is based off of my hair colors and my hairstyle because it's always changing. Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
Drag Race, comes on tonight. I'll be watching it.
Yes, Friday night. Mm-hmm. I forgot it was Friday. Second wildcard question. If you could go for dinner anywhere in the world at any point in time with anybody living or dead, who would you take? Where would you go?
I would take my grandmother. She passed away like 17 years ago.
Oh, sorry.
And yeah, we went to, what was this place? It was a hibachi place.
Oh.
That was like up on like, I forgot what it was called. It was basically like on a mountain. And we went for her 80th birthday. And that was like the first time that I actually saw her like just be happy, happy. So to like have that, I think I would appreciate it more than I did when I was 19.
Yeah.
So yeah, 36.
And that was in New York?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
it was like 2 hours away. It was a 2 hour drive.
Wow.
Really nice hibachi spot with like the garden. It was nice. I can't remember the place. I think it was like Jade Mountain. I could be making that up. But I forgot what it was, but it was a nice place.
Oh, that sounds lovely. Okay, final question. Is there any piece of advice, quote, saying that you found helpful in your life that you want to share with the listeners?
So I have it right here. It's on my little pegboard. And it says, I have more power than I think I have.
Oh, I have more power than I think I have. That's awesome.
Yeah, at times self-doubt, that inner saboteur, that RuPaul was
Yes, all the time.
Yeah, comes out and I'm like, why am I in these spaces? Do I even belong? Why am I, like, how am I showing up? Why am I showing up? Is this for them? Is this for me? And I think, especially in the last 2 years of me trying to build up my own company, and that's launching in a few months. And every step that I go is just like, why am I doing this? And like, girl, you just need to get a 9-to-5 and get a steady check, and just be a regular citizen of the world and pay your taxes. And you're making life so much harder. And you always fighting against people of like, I'm going to break society norms and not look like the way you want me to look. And showing up in conferences with Rubik's Cube's earrings and big curly red hair and with a big afro and my big old red glasses.
Nice.
Like, being extra. And I'm like, nah, but that's who I am and this is how I show my identity. So I have to look up, my husband suggested that I put it there so that way when I enter into the space and I enter into my work area, I see that and I'm reminded that, you know, I do have more power and I need to give myself that.
That's a great way to end this podcast. I just want to say thank you so much for making the time to come to the podcast.
No problem.
It's really good. I hope we get to meet in Brooklyn.
Yes. Let me know. You have my email. and I will meet you, and I could take you to, I love wings, so if you like wings, I could take you to some bomb wing spots, or I could just make some good wings here. Just let me know.
Amazing. Thank you again. Thanks so much.
Thank you for listening to Everybody Hates Me, Let's Talk About Stigma, hosted by Dr. Carmen Logie. Join us again for more conversations with stigma experts from around the globe. If you wanna listen, whatever I tell you.